Good evening. We're glad to see so many people out tonight. This winter weather, we never know if people are going to be brave enough, but around Star Valley, we should be used to it, shouldn't we? We're glad to have all of you here. We want to say congratulations to Scott and Ruth Gardner for 63 years. Anniversary. And as a note for next month, our meeting will be down in the City Council room at City Hall. This room will not be available to us. So the 15th of March, we'll have Don Wooden do the Alpine history. So we hope to see all of you there at the City Hall. So any other business we need to do? Jeremy, do you know? So we will get started, introduce Martha Kleins. We're going to be here a while.
Oh, I'm not going to go through all that. I don't want to scare everybody.
We're glad to have Martha here. We're glad she's willing to do this. I know we enjoy her columns in the newspaper, so it'll be fun to have her tell it to us in person. Martha?
Thank you. That would be scary, wouldn't it? Oh, I need my glasses, Marge. See, that's why I brought Marge.
And to help you drive.
And to help you drive.
We look better with them on.
Well, you tell me. I'm really glad to see all of you here tonight. I can see some relatives and good friends, and it's just good to have all of you here. I hope you won't be disappointed. I'll try and keep it short, and if we have to, I'll have a potty break. That was for somebody special there. I started writing my column, my looking back column, in 1986. I can't believe it was that long ago. 21 years ago. And I was working in the genealogy library at the time, and I had a few boring times, you know, when nobody came in, and I had access to all these microfilm newspapers. So I thought, well, I'm going to go down to the newspaper and ask them if they'd be interested in a column. And I went down and talked to them, and they said, sure. And so I started with the very first one. Who'd like to guess how old that would be? 1901. And that was quite a while ago, wasn't it? And I thought for my talk tonight, I'd try to pick out some interesting times in all this, these papers that kind of showed the important things that happened in Star Valley. And the first paper was not called the Star Valley Independent. It was called the Star Valley Pioneer. And it cost a whole $1.50 a year. And there was times, and I noticed in the papers that they would be, please pay for your subscription. And I remember my mother saying we couldn't afford the paper. You know, a dollar and a half was awfully big in those days. She said we never took the paper, we couldn't afford it. So, and we were part of another county. Who knows what it was? Uinta County.
I was born in it.
And it was 1904 when it was changed to the Star Valley Independent. Ruth was saying.
No.
I was saying the county didn't change in
no.
1904.
But that's when we changed the paper. They changed the paper to the Star Valley Independent. And Fairview was one of the largest communities in those days because of the Crow Creek Road. They didn't have any road out in the south end at all. And all of the commerce and everything came over the Crow Creek Road. And there was an ad in this 1902 paper, I cannot believe. It says, we defy competition on anything in the millinery line. We have 300 hats to choose from, and no two are alike. Prices range from $1.50 to $3.50 for trimmed hats. In those days, everybody wore hats. And can you imagine that in Fairview?
And who had the business?
It was N.C. Allred. He had a millinery store.
At Fairview or after?
That was Fairview.
Oh.
That was in Fairview. And then this is kind of an amusing thing. It says, this is from an August 1902 paper. It says, some of our citizens ought to have a lot of money because they never pay out any. And also in that paper it said, a number of Indians are canvassing the valley, selling buckskin gloves and begging for biscuits. How many of you remember hearing about Indians begging for food? And Mary, do you remember the Indians around?
I don't. This is my mother telling about it.
Do you remember seeing Indians in the valley?
Indians came to the valley and brought these decorated gauntlet gloves. These beautiful.
I'll bet they were pretty, weren't they?
Oh, they were beautiful. Mm-hmm. And they traded those for hides.
For deer hides. Did you ever buy any?
Oh, sure.
Uh-huh.
My father did. I did.
The reason I brought this, it wasn't to scare any of you, but this has all of my columns to 1995, and then I have another book just this size, and I've kept all of them, and you'd be surprised how many times I refer to this. People will call me and ask me if I remember what happened a certain year, and I look back and I can find it. And Ed mentioned that they're going to try and put this on the computer, on the internet. He asked to look at it, and so someday maybe you can find my looking back column on the internet.
Did you cover pretty much from 1902 in your?
Yes. I just went through the papers from starting in 1901 and picked out things that I thought would be interesting, and then I've just picked out a few of those for this talk. Now we're going to jump to 1906, and this I thought was real interesting. Clarence Gardner of Montpelier informed us that he is moving back to Afton, and he and his brother Bruce Gardner, being experienced mill men, have ordered a fine sawmill and will place it on their property near Swift Creek. Just imagine what that sawmill meant to the valley.
It was also a grist mill.
Yes.
The ground.
Uh-huh.
So I brought a load of grain. Carl and I brought a load of grain up. Had it
mm-hmm.
milled here.
Yeah. I remember my dad going over and getting grain ground, don't you, Marge? At that mill.
Mm-hmm.
Into flour. And before that, lumber was really impossible to get, so it was wonderful. Now I'm going to jump to the next thing that was really important in the valley, and it was what Dr. Perks covered, the flu epidemic. It was brought here by Frank Hoops, who came in from Colteville last Saturday. And this is from the October 1918 paper. Spanish influenza is fatal to three people. They were Mrs. Parley Bagley, Frank Hoops, and Dr. Lafayette Reese. He was the health officer. Dr. West was the health officer. And then is when he ordered all public meetings, dances, and picture shows canceled until the disease was checked. And people were ordered by him to stay away from Fairview because that was where it was coming from, through that road. And there was, they didn't want anybody going through that, through Fairview. It says most of the people in Afton were wearing masks, which helped prevent the disease. They didn't know what was causing it, so they were all wearing masks.
Do you have the list of those 10 or 12 young people who died of it?
I don't. I do probably in that book, but not.
It's in the Independent. It was 17, 18-year-olds, about 8 or 9 of them.
Hmm. It says by December of that year, there was 8 deaths in the valley, and that was when a gate was placed between the upper and lower valley. Everyone was forbidden to pass unless they had a pass from the local doctors. And a year later, this also is from what Dr. Perks said, in 1920 was this headline, Spanish flu invades homes in Freedom and Auburn, and there was 7 deaths in Freedom and 1 in Auburn, and that was in 1920. And Dr. Perks, did you say that was, sometimes they, a year later it'll crop up again or something?
Well, most of the people that died of flu, I had a good long talk with Dr. West. He says they didn't die of the flu, they died of the complications of the flu.
Okay, and you know, my grandmother, whom I was named after, died in 1919, and I'm sure it was because of that.
Dr. Beale got here in 1920, and he was here 15 years. You thought he'd been here a million years from the stories you hear. But he died in 1935. He was only here 15 years, Dr. Beale. And then because Dr. Worthen's wife was a relative of Dr. Beale, that's how come Dr. Worthen got here in 1935.
And then the next news, who would like to guess what it was in 1919?
The war.
The end of the war. And yesterday afternoon, this is from the Fairview News in March 7th, 1919. Yesterday afternoon, people turned out to pay respects to the returning overseas soldiers. The afternoon Fairview bands played stirring national airs and sweet music. They were so very patriotic in those days. The boys were escorted into the valley by relatives and friends from Afton, Osmond, Smoot, and Fairview, the band being the head of the procession. And there was about 500 people that did that.
The war must have ended, though, in 1918, because it ended on November 11th.
It did, but, you know, maybe we didn't hear about it until We didn't have very good communications in those days.
This is where the men came home, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it would have been later.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They'd have to cross the ocean.
Yes, and it took quite a while to get across the ocean, didn't it? And then in July 18th, 1919, there was a big ad welcoming the World War I servicemen home. And there was a patriotic program at the Tabernacle. And E.M. Barris gave the welcoming address. He was my uncle, and he was the mayor of Afton at that time. And there was a duet from the Gardner Brothers. They were good singers. And Annie Hood sang Flag Without a Stain. That was a real popular song in those days.
Which
and
Gardner Brothers?
I don't know. What do you think? It just says the Gardner Brothers.
Yeah.
Would it have been Arch Gardner?
Arch, and which one of them?
Mm-hmm.
O.D.'s father was another one.
Mm-hmm.
They had an excellent quartet. I've heard them many times.
Another song that Annie Hood sang was In Flanders Field.
Was Annie Hood Easton Hood's mother?
Yes, and she was a wonderful singer. She, Mary, why did you say that? Why'd you do that?
I heard her sing.
You didn't think she was?
I didn't care for that.
Was it a strong voice? And I don't remember hearing her.
It was shaky.
I know.
But that Gardner quartet is as good as you've ever heard.
I'll bet they were.
She was a terrific bass. But they had four distinct parts. And
they were good singers. I remember Archibald Gardner singing, and he was a beautiful singer. Now, in June 20th, 1919, there was a notice of 2 creameries being built in Fairview. Can you imagine? Making a total of 13 creameries in the valley at that time. This was in 1919. Both the Burton and the Mutual companies will construct up-to-date plants in Fairview, and work begins at once. The Burton family, or the Burton Company, purchased land from George Books, and I imagine that was the one that went up toward Crow Creek. I remember that creamery. And then there was another one, land from Fred Brown. But can you imagine, too? All the little towns had creameries in those days because milking cows was an important thing.
When I came here, there were 323 dairy farmers. There are now 14.
Isn't that scary? Yeah.
Everyone, almost every family in the valley, there were a few exceptions here in Afton and in the different towns. Freedom had, I guess, an exception, but almost everyone.
Milk cows.
Off of the dairy.
Of course, we had cows. Everybody had cows.
And some of the farms did have two numbers on the cans. The kids did have a number beside the parents.
Yeah. Now, this is a little bit of humor from the paper in 1920. Mr. Clark went, when coming home from the last season of legislature, what Mr. Clark would that have been?
I don't know.
Went into a dry goods store to buy his wife a new waist. Now, do you all know what a waist is? It was a precursor to the bra, wasn't it? I mean, there was no bra in those days, and it was just... there. And when the clerk asked him what size, he says, "I don't know, but I think it's about a 64. And just then he saw a woman crossing the street who he thought to be about the same size as his wife. So he went to ask the lady what size waist she wore. And he asked in a respectable manner. But she batted him, thinking he was too cheeky. And that was in the paper. I thought that was really cute. Yeah. And I didn't realize, but in 1922, the people of Jackson finally got a bridge across Snake River. Before that, they had to ferry across. And that was in March 17th, 1922. Bridge is completed
bridge
over
in
Snake
Jackson
River.
Uh-huh. Or in Alpine?
At Wilson.
Oh.
At Wilson. The last spike was driven that day. So, you know, there's been a, that was 22. That's just 9 years before I was born. Well, of course, I'm getting pretty old.
There could have been a bridge across Snake River then. But I think when Mother left the valley in 1906, they probably had the ferry across.
Yeah.
I'm sure there is a bridge, the Alpine Bridge. I'm sure I crossed it before 1922. I crossed it.
Well, and then this next thing is kind of funny. I had to put this in. How many of you remember when people used to roll their cigarettes? I sure do.
When Hans Aker could smoke a cigarette without ever touching. Just hung it on his lip. How many of you seen Wid Hans Aker smoke a cigarette without touching?
This was from a 1924 paper, and it says, "Genuine Bull Durham." I remember Bull Durham. "Two bags for 15 cents.
Prince Albert.
You can roll 100 cigarettes for 15 cents. So it was a lot cheaper then. And people got really good at rolling them. I sure remember watching them roll them and smoke them.
My father used to say that if a man had high-top boots mm-hmm. and rolled his cigarettes, he had no time to work.
Oh! Oh, shoot. And then from the Fairview News on February 20th, 1925, was news of a newfangled radio that helped pass the time on those long winter nights. That was when radio first came.
What a can.
If we're as fortunate as Mr. and Mrs. Mariner Barris, he was my uncle, we could hear wonderful things on those cold winter nights. The latest music, plays, lectures, programs, and news are being broadcast on their new radio.
But mostly static.
Was it?
Mostly static, yeah.
I wonder what kind of batteries they had to be, batteries.
Oh, yeah, because that was before electricity. It probably was. And they had fun in those days. I'm going to tell you what they did. This is from an April 3rd, 1925 paper. The Alpine School went coasting Thursday morning. They chose a long side hill of the Lauren Vannoy place. And the youngsters came down on their hand sleds and skis for a while, but the climb up became monotonous. So Mr. Joe Keziah came to the rescue with a team of horses and a big sled. The sled was hauled to the top, the team was unhitched, and all the children climbed onto the big sleigh. Can you imagine?
I've done it.
Have you?
Over across the valley, we did it one night.
And they turned the tongue back.
Yeah, you hold the tongue back, and you could guide it with that.
It said that the rate of that sled came down the hill for a distance of half a mile and could not be measured, but it would have made an airship ashamed of itself. And the joyriders were Mrs. Joe Keziah, Florence Vail, F.J. Dale, and Miss Leon Hinks. Do you remember any of those? Here's another funny. This is a Good Samaritan story that backfired in the May 1925 paper. During the stormy weather last week, Mr. Dime Flukiger discovered one evening what he believed to be a car stuck in the mud a short distance from his house. The roads were terrible in those days. Mr. Flukiger, being a strong believer in the Golden Rule, decided to help the poor fellow out. So he went to the pasture, harnessed his team, and proceeded to the scene. To his great chagrin, it was only a young couple parked by the road to spoon.
I can tell you one more thing about Dime Fluke.
Oh.
He's reported to be the only man that could take 2 10-gallon cans, one in each hand, and set them on the wagon together. And the wagon is about so high.
He was very strong.
Extremely strong, yeah.
Huh.
But he wasn't the strongest man in the valley. The strongest one, there were two men, and that was Arch Gardner's father. I'm not sure his father. Yeah, I think so. No, it was...
Brig Gardner.
It was Ken Gardner's father. And Brig Gardner and Hoffman down at Alpine.
Hmm.
They had two men on the log. My Uncle Ether was there, two men on the ends of the log and trying to lift the log, and Joe Hoffman came along and said, "You guys get away from here." And he picked the log up on and walked off with it. But the Gardner man, Ken and Link's father, he was a tottering man at about 40. Done too much.
And the January 20th, 1928 Independent was the first news of the Swiss cheese industry in the valley. That was 1928. This is from the Freedom News. More Swiss cheese keeps going out of the valley, and the people who are sending to the Swiss cheese factory are more satisfied by the service rendered by a Mr. Brogue, the accordion playing manager. He's from Switzerland.
Yeah, but always remember, August Dable was here before Ernest Brogue.
Was he doing Swiss cheese, though?
No, he was doing cheddar cheese.
Well, I'm talking about Swiss cheese.
But remember in the history meeting when we had the duel between Rose Ray and Sylvia Reeves?
No, I'm not surprised.
August Dable got here before Brogue's death.
Yeah, I'm sure, because there was all those Swiss...
August Turner ran the Aetna cheese factory. You mentioned the company was with Burton's.
Burton's, yeah.
What was the other one?
Mutual Creamery.
They had August Sturgner ran it for I Paul Milk there. In Aetna, and when Brogues came in, they paid no less than 10 cents a pound for butterfat, more than Mutual Creamery paid.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of 10-year period, they had $1 million worth of cheese on hand. In addition to that. And my father and Ray Clark were principals in that, mm-hmm. in getting them in here.
Well, back in 1928, it says, on Monday morning, 10 teams left for Soda Springs with Swiss cheese from the Brogue Creamery. Now, that's a lot of cheese, isn't it?
But they were here before that.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. And then from the January 12, 1933 paper, that would have been 5 years later, a mass meeting was called in Freedom, and they decided to build a cooperative Swiss cheese factory, and that was built in Freedom. And
still there.
And from the April 10th, 1933 paper, a letter from the White House was received thanking the Star Valley Creamery for a 200-pound wheel of Swiss cheese that was delivered to President Roosevelt.
They made their cheese about that big, and then they started out, I think, being about 6 inches thick, mm-hmm. and then by the time they got cured, they were like that.
Says he and his family are finding it very delicious. And then, you know, there wasn't much mention of the stock market crash in 1929, and I figure it's because everybody was poor. That.
Well, that's the year me and you were born.
No, I was born in 31.
Oh.
You're making it. But there was a slight mention. I found this. It says, during the latter part of 1929, Star Valley has moved along at a steady pace, while eastern centers have felt the depression caused by New York market speculations. Star Valley can steadily improve with little assistance from outside sources. All that is necessary is for all of us to pull together. Star Valley State Bank, President Clarence Gardner, Vice President Alvin Robinson, is that your uncle?
My grandpa.
Your grandpa. And cashier T.E. Madding. Madding. M-A-D-D-I-N-G. He must have moved from here. And so that was...
Lynch was one of the officers of the bank, too.
Mm-hmm. And this is the first mention of what turned into the airplane industry, I think. In the May 1st, 1930 paper was an interesting article about Farnham Call. Who's related to him here?
Do you know Moroni Call? Did you know Moroni?
Lamoni and Lawrence and Lothair. They were Farnham's kids who built my house.
Well, their father was Farnham Call.
That's right.
And their mother was a Welsh.
Mm-hmm. Minnie.
Minnie Welsh.
Well, this is
Minnie's daughter.
I got what's her name? She had cancer of the ovary. I know the diseases, but I forgot her name.
But anyway, he was an Afton carpenter, it said, and he's building an airplane in his garage, the first one in Star Valley, and in the state of Wyoming. If all goes well, he expects to have it ready by the 4th of July. Everything but the engine will be made in Afton. And so really, that was probably the beginning of the airplane industry in...
I think it was these kids.
Mm-hmm.
I might mention along that line, in 1929, I stayed with Minnie Welch. She was a grandmother, and she took in me as a boarder. And she lived right next door to Farnham Call.
Mm-hmm.
And these kids were real brilliant, Lamoni and his brothers, and they decided to start building airplanes about that time, a little bit later. But we started trying to make a snow machine at that time. We used a motorcycle, and we didn't have enough traction to do much, but we used a motorcycle.
And then from the 1930 Independent was news that the mail would no longer come into the valley through the Crow Creek Road, and that was because the South Road, they called it then, not the South End Road, had been built, and they started bringing the mail in from that road, and that was kind of the demise of Fairview. We were no longer as bustling as we were before, and it was Afton became the main town. And one time Fairview would have been considered, I think, one of the main places. And that road was built by convicts. Did you know that? A lot of it was built with convict labor. They had the Wyoming Penitentiary sent people in to build that. Now, the year I was born, 1931, was the bottom of the Depression. And it was a very unusual year. There was hardly any snow that year. My mother said that men were able to get logs out most of the winter, and that was very unusual. But it was the forerunner of a severe drought, and it lasted about 4 or 5 years. It was a big problem in the 30s, kind of like this year, the water problem. And this is from the 1931 Fairview News. The residents of Bitter Creek have decided to pipe Sprague Creek down the canyon for culinary purposes. They need to do something to get better water for their homes. Cy Balls, that's my dad, and Albert Barris brought the first 2 loads of pipe from Kemmer Friday. Those interested in this project were Eldon Erickson, Harvey Allred, Emery Albert and Lester Barris, and A.R. Kennington. And that's a good, that Sprague line still has that original line, and it's one of the best ones in Fairview. Marge is on that line. Yes.
You were talking of a drought. There are stories told of sending cattle to Nebraska because
yes.
the feed was too short. Was that about the time?
It was. It was.
1919.
Well,
was a Nebraska year.
That's right, it was. 1919. This is in 1932, a little later, that it was a bad drought again.
But in 1924, I walked across Salt River down to that place in Etna without getting my feet wet.
It was that dry.
On the rocks. Mm-hmm. There was just a little drizzle mm-hmm. in between. And that was the year. Have you ever heard the song, It Ain't Gonna Rain No More, No More?
That's when it came out, huh?
That's when it came out.
Oh. It says in April 1932, this is, the farmers were indeed glad to get some wheat from the Red Cross. The Red Cross was actually issuing wheat to help the drought that was so bad. How many of you remember your parents talking about that, getting wheat? You're all so young.
Yeah, hard to talk to kids, isn't it?
And because of the severe shortage of hay in the winter of 1935, there was news of a rabbit drive because the rabbits were eating everybody's hay. And from this February 14th, 1935 paper, Our community has more than 1,000 rabbit ears, and others are following close. It's estimated that 3,000 bunnies have gone the way of the Indian in Star Valley. The lower valley is also showing inroads on the jumping jacks, and that was signed by S.B. Murray, county agent. Can you imagine all those rabbits?
I've seen them so thick on the haystacks. Well, we go out and get hay this morning, in the morning, and all the leaves would be gone off the hay, there'd be rabbit droppings all over the haystack. And we stayed down there and shot them at night.
Hmm.
And right there, pinned them down a bit.
And from the 1934 paper was when the Bedford Thane got their canal. And that was because of federal money that came in to help. What would we have done without President Roosevelt and his programs that helped the valley so much? And then in February 1931 was the first mention of a cutter race. It was a winter carnival held in Thane, and the cutter race person got first place, $15. Pulling team, first place, $7. And Henry Heap was the one that won the first cutter race back in those days. And then in 1934, there was that terrible forest fire, the Pearson Creek burn. How many remember hearing about the Pearson Creek burn? The thing that I remember about it was that my uncle Mariner Barris was riding along in a truck, and he had his elbow out the window. And in those days, the Grays River Road was so narrow that it was just one lane. And a truck swiped his arm, and he got gangrene in it and died 3 days later. Isn't it really?
That fire was up Grays River.
Yes.
The I Pearson. Was on a fire that same year over in on the Hoback.
And it covered 10,000 acres, burned 10,000 acres. That's a big fire. This My Uncle Mitt had a fox farm at that time, and this is one of the ads he had in the May 1935 paper. It illustrates how bad the depression was. "I will buy bull calves that you ordinarily destroy for 50 cents if you deliver them to my place. If you have two or more, I will come and get them. E.M. Barris, phone 7J. That's pretty good, wasn't it? 50 cents. And if you had any money to eat out, here's some good prices. I don't ever remember the Afton Grill or even hearing about it. But in the Independent, this is what they had. Fried chicken dinner, 50 cents. T-bone steak, 45 cents. Hamburger steak, 25 cents. Hamburgers, 10 cents. Salads, 10 cents. You could eat really good for a dollar, if you had a dollar.
Yeah. And
another thing that had a big impact on the valley were the CCC camps.
23, Lee Call figured there was 23 Star Valley girls married CCC boys. Lee Call researched it out.
Well, that's a lot.
23 CCC boys married Star Valley girls.
Well, the Lane Harts and the Dartys and the...
Lane Harts, Dartys.
One was my sister, Margie.
Mm-hmm.
Perry, two session sisters married.
Mm-hmm.
But Lee Call had a list of 23.
Yeah.
Lane Hart married.
Yes, Boyd. And just think of all the good that those CCC boys did. They built a lot of roads and did a lot of good for the valley. This is one thing that they did. This is from the February 1936 paper. After the drought, there was this huge year of snow. Huge drifts and slides blocked the road in Salt Canyon. 16 slides came down, and the Star Valley Chamber of Commerce contacted the CCC boys to go out and help shovel through the slides. The reason is the huge drifts were 8 feet deep, and the snow plows couldn't get through them. They actually had to shovel through them because the snow plows just couldn't handle it.
My mother wrote me a postcard, I think about April. I was in the University of Wyoming at the time. And she said that they had kept track of the snow that fell in Afton from the time she wrote the letter, probably sometime in April. From the first of the year, 25 feet of snow had fallen that year.
That was the year that Marge was born, my sister. Oh, she said shut up. She doesn't want me to mention. Okay, I won't mention it.
Historian, no.
Just pretend like you didn't hear that, okay? One of the most wonderful times in Star Valley was in 1938. Who knows why?
I was born.
Oh.
I was born.
You bet. It was electricity. Everybody got, the REA had come through. And this is a funny incident that Floyd Hunsaker called and told me. Everybody was wiring their houses, of course. And many of the people didn't have all their light fixtures installed yet and had bare wires sticking out in the walls and ceilings. And Joe Harrison reported that a neighbor, they were going to turn it on November 17th, and they didn't know what the current was like. And so he was scurrying around putting buckets on the floor under the wires to keep the juice from running out on the floor. Well, you know, come to think of it, they didn't know what the current was.
It had to be pretty much in the cities because elsewhere I am, I understood they had the house wired with batteries for a while.
Oh.
And then they had to rewire. That'd be direct current. And
oh, sure. Yeah.
My dad, Milford Gardner, was one of the electricians at the time.
Uh-huh.
And his brother-in-law, Alan Thatcher, was also wiring homes.
Mm-hmm.
And he reported this.
The same thing.
The incident of a lady who said she was going to put a bucket under the wires until he got it completed. And she says, why? And he says, so that it doesn't run off all over the floor. So
it did. They did really think that.
No.
Who knows what happened in 1939? Something that we all enjoyed.
Yeah.
No. The Valley On Hotel opened. at its grand opening. Under the management of Evan P. Call, it has 35 rooms and is 4 stories high, with a swimming pool in the basement and the largest ballroom in Wyoming. They only operated that swimming pool maybe 1 year, and it was... Was it more than that?
They had a divided dance floor, because they had the regular building that you see there, but out the back there was open air.
Yeah.
Summer, mm-hmm. And you could...
How many remember dancing in the Valley On?
I have.
You bet. There was some good dances there.
I helped haul rocks for that foundation around that building there for the Valley On.
Did you?
Thomas Call when he built that. I hauled 8 loads one day and that really shook him up because it cost $1 a load.
Anyway, it meant a lot to the Valley, that Valley On. When I was in high school, all of our dances were held down there. And they were good dances. And then the next big thing that I want to mention is World War II. And that really affected the Valley because after Pearl Harbor, there was an exodus of people that left the Valley. And you know why. There was all those defense jobs, and people just... that was something to do. They wanted to go get those good jobs, and a lot of people never came back to the Valley. So it meant it was a big change. From the January 29th, 1942, that would have been just a month after Pearl Harbor, there was this article in the Independent. Metal workers wanted in Nevada. Contact the employment service in Kemmer. Pay is $1.25 an hour, which was a lot. And time and a half for overtime. Furnish your own housing and your own tools. That was big money. And then from the February 12th paper, 237 men registered for the draft in Star Valley. We estimated only 20% of them would be suitable for military duty on account of being farm workers or having dependents. But that was quite a few to register, wasn't it, from a small valley. And now many commodities were rationed during the war. Who remembers?
My grandmother had a room full of sugar. And I said, Grandma, what are you doing with that room full of sugar? She says, I'm getting it so the hoarders can't get it.
Oh. Oh, shoot. It says gas rationing blanks are distributed to all the general stores and service stations in the valley. And this was in 1942. And then in February 1943, shoe rationing became effective. Stamp 17 in the war ration book entitled a person to buy one pair of shoes a year.
Shoes? I remember standing in line with one of the ration books, get a pair of silk socks for my mother.
Uh-huh. And standing in there together. And you had to pull out one of those stamps. Mm-hmm. That's neat. And did you know that there was a P-51 warplane named the Spirit of Star Valley? I never knew that. War bond buyers and the efforts of G.A. Neuswander and Wardell Klinger were responsible for getting the fighter plane named.
Dallas was Wardell's son was one of the
pilots. Dallas was an ace in Flying Tigers.
He was, yeah.
Dallas told me that he built the flying saddle with money that he received from the Chinese government. Dallas, when Gay and I was in China in 2000, just tell him what would happen when I tell him the Chinese hate the Japanese. Just tell him what happened when I told him I was a physician to one of the Flying Tigers.
They loved it.
They thought it was better than delivering Rulon Gordon.
Oh, well, that was something.
Did you do it?
Yeah.
That same time, I had a whole pot full of bills from the China over there while I was over there. Mm-hmm. Took a sack full of that much.
for a dollar.
My gosh.
The price was...
About this time, my mother, Luella Balls, told about how hard it was to raise money for war bonds. Every town had to raise so much money for war bonds. And she and Leora Rich were in the DUP at the time, and they suggested that they have an auction to raise Fairview's quota. And Bill Payne had just sold his Sage Valley Ranch, and he was considered the richest man in Fairview, you know. He had some money. And he bought a lot of bonds, and it really helped that auction. And from the Smoot News, there was this little note. Our bond drive went over big, $7,500, without a pain. P-A-Y-N-E. Without a pain. So I thought that was kind of cute. And then, of course, the wonderful news that the war had ended came in August 14th, 1945 paper, and it said, "Victory is celebrated by all in Star Valley. Star Valley citizens went wild with joy. The fire siren gave a five-minute blast, and a din of horns car horns could be heard all over Afton. The celebration included an atomic bomb dance." Who knows why they had an atomic bomb dance? Why do you think? Very good, Ruth. They
atomic
figured
bomb
that
was dropped August the 6th, 1945.
And it shortened the war and saved hundreds of lives.
That was Hiroshima. And a couple days later, they dropped another one on Nagasaki. And the war ended August the 15th, 1945.
And they figure if they hadn't dropped those bombs,
it might have still been going.
Yeah. So that... And then in 1946 is when they built the big Thane Creamery in Thane. And here, what was it, 2 years ago that it closed? Kind of sad, isn't it? And the creamery was dedicated in 1948 with Wilfred Clark as president, Cyril Cranny as vice president, and Ernest Brogue as manager. And that year was also the beginning of the artificial breeding program, which meant a lot to the milkers in Star Valley. And Rulon Osmond was the president, Leon Taggart was the vice president, Denzel Wood was the secretary, and Clarence Erickson and Seth Moser were directors. And cutter racing got its official start in Thane after the Cutter Race Association was organized, and that was in 1947. And it had a full-page ad. It said, "All American Cutter races at Thane on February 14th and 15th with 16 match teams featuring the best cutter races in the United States." There used to be lots of teams in those cutter races. And then in 1949, a lot of us remember that. There was a bad snow year. How many remember? It was got really deep. From the February 10th, 1949 paper, "Traffic is interrupted for several days as crews work to keep the roads open. Last Monday, William J. Moser, King Cranny, and Cos Webb were driving through Salt Canyon when a snowslide completely covered their vehicle. Mr. Webb shoveled down to the vehicle and helped Moser and Cranny out, and they were unhurt." And from the March 17, 1949 paper, "Grays River snow is the deepest ever recorded. In 1936, which was a big year, it was 50.1 inches, and in 1949, it was 51 inches of snow."
Inches or feet?
Inches.
It's only 4 feet. That's not
that. Well, apparently it is. When it's, this isn't drifts or anything. This is just, you know, just... plain. So that's pretty much, pretty a lot. Yeah. And then a project that employed hundreds of people began in 1952. Who knows what that would be?
Palisades Dam.
Very good.
What was that?
Palisades Dam.
Oh, okay.
It employed hundreds of people. And the big news in the February 15th, 1957 paper was the completion of the dam. It took 5 years to build. The switch is to be thrown Saturday by Mrs. E.W. Fanning, wife of the late Idaho Falls mayor, because of his efforts to get the project going. I didn't know that. And in another first, in 1953, what do you think it was in 1953? No. The first reception of television in the valley. And it came from a KID transmitter, and it came to the Jess Hoops home in Fairview. He was the first one. The first pitcher in Afton was Ken Olson's.
My dad came up here to work on the Palisades Dam. That's how I got here. And they came in 53. But I lived in California. I had Cal Newton for years. I couldn't believe people had to be here.
I was in college, and that was in 1950 when I first saw my first TV. 51. I graduated in 1950, so we were pretty sheltered, weren't we?
We only had one channel.
Half the time.
And it was so snowy, you couldn't see it. No. And the first things that we saw were the wrestling matches and Lawrence Welk. About all you could get. Well, I'm going to conclude with, yes?
You have mentioned a couple of things that I think are really important here that we used to think were important in health. We used to have boxing and wrestling matches throughout the valley.
Oh, yeah.
Every winter. And we'd get people in from different places. But also, every Saturday afternoon was baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And we played baseball. There were eight teams here. We finished the first league, the first part of the league on the 4th of July. And then the last one we played at fair time for the final zone. So each one in the valley had terrific teams, and Fairview had
one of the best.
They had one of the best. Boy, I pitched against them and threw my arm away.
You bet. I'll say. Well, you know, it was hard for me. I had to go through all of these and try and pick out a few things. And there's so much history. I've only covered 50 years, so maybe you'll have to have me back again for the next 50. I don't know. Oh, I should say. T-Texas Tyler.
Yeah. I remember when Albino Ray couldn't come in, and so they substituted Lawrence Welk.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't remember that.
I was unknown at that time. You don't remember how disappointed we were.
I remember little Jimmy Dickens.
Yeah.
I remember him. Well, in 1953, there was a bank robbery in Star Valley. And I'm sure you remember it, a lot of you, from the August 28, 1953 paper. Burglars got $24,000 in a Star Valley bank robbery. The theft was discovered about 4 p.m. Sunday afternoon by Orrin Jenkins, assistant cashier at the bank. And I got a letter from Stuart Brown shortly after that. He says, I faithfully read your looking back column, and your account of the big bank robbery brought back fond memories of Louis Jensen. Remember, he was our only
sheriff.
He came in my office a day or two after the burglary and said that he had about solved the case. He added that he knew that it was a Democrat who had done the foul deed.
That was close.
He said there was another $50,000 in the safe. If the robber had been a Republican, Louis added, he would have taken it all. There was speculation that Orrin Jenkins did it, but, you know, who knows? An inside job, and they never did solve it.
There was a bank robbery before that.
Your Palisades story reminds me of one I heard when I came here. A lady from Palisades came into Star Valley Bank with a bag full of $20 bills. And the teller says, gee, lady, did you hoard all this? And she says, not quite. My sister hoarded half of it.
Oh, gosh.
That's my Palisades story.
Oh, that was good. appreciate your attention, and I promised that I'd quit at 8 o'clock, and it's 8 o'clock, so.
Not by that clock. It's probably stopped by.
And I've really enjoyed talking about this, and it's been hard to choose the things to talk about because we have such an interesting history, and I just hope you... You what?
You didn't start until after 8.
Oh, didn't I? Yes.
I worked in the bank, and I remember the FBI come in, and they fingerprinted all of us, and they knew they would go to Jackson and have a big spending spree, so they'd go to Jackson and watch, and the camera and watch, and the time the FBI got through with us, we almost admitted committing the crime because they fingerprinted us and everything else. They come in through the back window, and it was quite a thing. They take us each individually.
What do you think? Do you think it was an inside job, or do you think there was really a?
No, I don't think so. I think that it was
somebody that came in. They just never found him. Well, it was exciting anyway, wasn't it? Well, thank you.
Thank you, Martha. The doctor just suggested that we have you come back sometime and finish.
And go for the next 50 years? Okay, I will.
And I promise I won't tell any more stories.
Well, oh, I like those.
That's supposed to be really
happy. Oh, my gosh.
Thank you. We appreciate it, everyone coming tonight. I'm glad to see so many people here. We'll see you next month, March 15th, at Afton City Hall.